A television battle of how much to pay.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Happy New Year from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The deadline has come and gone, yet negotiations continue this morning in the TV feud between Fox and Time Warner Cable. They're fighting over carriage fees that Fox wants to charge to carry its programming. 13 million Time Warner Cable customers have among their lineup FX, Fox Reality Channel, and Fox-owned TV stations. The economic roller coaster ride of the past couple of years did a great job of fraying nerves. To ease the pain, the Federal Reserve bought trillions of dollars worth of mortgage bonds. That sent mortgage rates down low, really low. Brett Neely reports the Fed probably won't do the same this year.
Right now, you can get a 30-year mortgage for as little as 5%. That's the lowest rates have been, ever. Now that the economy is stabilized, the Fed plans to stop buying mortgages this spring. Brian Bethune is an economist with IHS Global Insight. He expects rates to rise.
There's going to be some moderate upward pressure on rates, but we don't see anything dramatic.
Those low interest rates have propped up the housing sector. But even if they rise, Bankrate.com's Greg McBride says it shouldn't hurt the economy's rebound.
Mortgage rates are still going to be low enough that they're not going to be a headwind for prospective home buyers.
McBride says 2010 is the year to refinance for anyone still holding an adjustable rate mortgage. He says rates can only go up from here. I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
There's no national cap-and-trade system for greenhouse gases. Some states are doing their own. Minnesota will start requiring utilities to weigh the cost of carbon when deciding where to get their energy. That could hurt out-of-state coal-fired power plants. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
Minnesota wants to discourage its utilities from building coal-fired power plants or buying power from coal-fired plants in other states like North Dakota. Minnesota has calculated the cost of any future fees on carbon at up to $34 per ton. Minnesota utilities have to get state permission when they want to build a new power plant or import energy. Starting in 2012, they'll have to include the cost of carbon in their applications. Beth Goodpaster is a staff attorney with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
We know that carbon regulation is coming. We don't know exactly the form of it. We don't know exactly the price tag. So let's analyze a few different scenarios.
North Dakota says Minnesota is violating the U.S. Constitution, which says states can't regulate each other's businesses. California came up against the same argument when it was formulating a new carbon tax. Out-of-state power plants said they were being discriminated against. Bill Becker heads the National Association of Clean Air Agencies. He says Congress could head off the interstate squabbling with a national cap-and-trade system.
But until Congress takes action, what we're left with is states and localities throughout the country having to take matters into their own hands.
Even if that offends their neighbors. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
2009 was not the banner year for local governments. Tax revenues were anemic and budget crises grew. What did they do to get by? Take on debt, of course. A lot of it. More than $410 billion in new municipal bonds were issued last year, and the borrowing's likely to continue. From Chicago Public Radio, Adrian Hill reports.
Illinois has plans to issue nearly $3.5 billion in bonds next week to help fill a budget deficit, and that's just a tiny piece of the $450 billion local governments across the country are expected to raise next year in the bond markets. Michael Decker is with the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association.
I think there's pressure on states and localities to continue to invest in capital projects like transportation facilities, new school construction, water and sewer, and other kind of infrastructure facilities, even though they're facing fiscal constraints.
Illinois has had its credit rating battered recently, but says Tom Doe of Municipal Market Advisors that shouldn't dampen the appetite for state-issued bonds.
The reason is that even though for the trouble that, say, you know, Illinois is facing right now, there is a perception that's not to be too Pollyanna about it, but there is a better day ahead.
Doe says bonds from states with lower credit ratings often pay higher yields, making them more attractive to investors. In Chicago, I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
You know what else keeps going up? The cost of higher education. The average law student takes out 60 to 90 grand for school. And despite what you think, they're not all making the big bucks right after graduation. Sally Herships reports some can't even find work.
Eric Ricosi just graduated from Loyola Law School in Chicago. He owes a lot in student loans, and he can't find a job. So he's going back to school. That way, he can defer his loans for a year. But more school also means more debt.
It's not a lot in the big picture. You know, what's the difference between 150 grand and 170 grand, really? In the loan payment, it's only a few more dollars a month.
Brian Hamilton is CEO of SageWorks. He analyzes data on law firms and other companies. He says it's not just Ricosi. The entire law industry is suffering right now. Revenue is down 21% from last year.
Of our top 10 worst performing industries, the legal profession is number two.
That's worse than car dealerships or furniture stores. Hamilton says with the recession, companies that have been traditional clients of lawyers are struggling to maintain profit margins by cutting costs. And for those companies, legal fees can seem like big bucks. That means fewer jobs for recent grads like Ricosi. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
On this first day of 2010, there are some new state laws taking effect. In North Carolina, the money crop is wilting with a new smoking ban for bars and restaurants. It's already partly prohibited in neighboring tobacco-yielding Virginia. And always being the trailblazer, California becomes the first state in the nation to partially ban the use of trans fats in restaurants. Does tofu have trans fat? You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, January 1st, 2010 at marketplace.org. Looking for something quick and easy to eat? One entrepreneur is trying to make fast food even faster. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports on a website that's getting a lot of hits.
That's the second gong of the day at GoMobo headquarters. The gong rings every time there's a big piece of good news at the company.
I am gonging because we have been officially accepted as an iPhone developer.
Dave Fellows is one of 10 employees at GoMobo. He works for 28-year-old Noah Glass, who started the company 4 years ago.
I'd say that I've been working 100-hour weeks every week for the last 4 years.
And with a work ethic like that, it won't surprise you what he's been working on. GoMobo is a website that's meant to save you time ordering takeout food. You order online or on your phone, pay in advance, and skip the lines when you go pick it up. It doesn't cost anything for you, the customer. Glass and his company collect fees from participating restaurants.
We're going to end this year at 5,000 restaurants.
And GoMobo will be making a profit at 3,500, he says. The huge jump in numbers is due to deals with Subway, Burger King, Dunkin' Donuts. Up till now, the company's been running on investor support, primarily from a wealthy venture capitalist Glass showed the idea to just before he was supposed to start attending Harvard Business School. This was the guy's response.
Show me that, you know, you're really in this thing and withdraw from Harvard Business School, and then we'll put the money in.
So Glass traded his potential Harvard degree for a whole lot of takeout food.
I'm going to log in and register, which is how I sign into my account.
Glass pulls out his BlackBerry to show me how the product works.
I will get a 6-inch turkey breast fresh value meal.
Just to test things out, I'll order the old-fashioned way, by standing in line when we get to the restaurant.
We have lettuce, tomato, green peppers.
Glass picks his order up, already paid for, about 30 seconds after we walk in the door. And when I finally sit down at the table, he says,
5 minutes, right there.
That was 5 minutes. You've been sitting here. Your sandwich is getting cold.
Okay, so it works. Or at least restaurants large and small seem to think so. But how common is this kind of entrepreneurial success? What does it take? I asked Rod Kurtz, senior editor of Inc. magazine.
It's not good enough to just have an idea. It's not good enough just to work hard. It's where the two intersect. That's where you find the real success stories.
It's the combination of innovation, smarts, hard work, and competitiveness, he says, and confidence. What it takes to do some of the things Noah Glass has done in his life. Bike across the country, move to South Africa to work for a company that helps business startups, abandon a budding career playing lacrosse, and oh yeah, throw Harvard Business School out the window to start a company. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Well, before the financial crisis, Americans were doing a couple of things at a record-setting pace, shopping and buying houses. Someone came up with the idea to combine them. Mall apartments were supposed to be the next big thing. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports on how all that's working out.
The Americana Mall in Glendale, California, was designed to look like Main Street, you know, where people used to shop before there were malls. There's a paved street, a trolley, a big lawn with a fountain. There are restaurants and shops like Forever 21 and Tiffany, and above them, hundreds of apartments and condos. Welcome to the Mall of the Future, or what was supposed to be the future. Suzanne Mulvey is a real estate strategist with PPR.
The ability to unlock some of the value that sits in that actual real estate entice these developers to come up with alternative ways to get more value out of the same property.
Mall apartments went up in Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., and Arizona. Then the real estate market collapsed. Apartments above one Boston mall went into foreclosure. The Americana's done well with rentals, but half the condos, which sell for between $500,000 and $2 million, are unsold. Real estate consultant Spence Mell says it's not just the economy. Manufacturing Main Street is tricky.
Those areas have grown organically over, you know, a 100-year period. To just throw them up like Disneyland, people have trouble with that.
Some people.
I never want to leave. It's that great. Nobody paid me to say that, by the way.
Paul DeGarabedian moved into the Americana a year ago.
You're living in a mall, and people laugh when you say that, but it's a way of life that I love. I have like five or six restaurants right here that I can literally walk to. I can do shopping for clothes, whatever I want to do. There's the hustle and bustle. I never feel alone. There's always people around.
The Americana offers concierge service, yoga classes on the lawn, a farmer's market every Saturday. Real estate strategist Suzanne Mulvey says these perks are crucial because mall apartment living still presents a major psychological hurdle.
I believe in the mixed-use concept. I just don't know that I want to live at the mall.
At the Americana in Glendale, California, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And finally, Billy Joe Sanders just bought some real estate. At $5,500, he thought he got a deal. But the West Pennsylvania house he purchased at a tax sale isn't there anymore. It was demolished by the county. Officials say Sanders should have made sure the property wasn't slated to be torn down. Bright side, Sanders has a nice piece of land to visit to think about what he'll do to get that money back. Check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts with us. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.